Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Welcome back to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their five-star husbands who read fantasy books with them. I'm Kyle.
I'm Lauren.
I'm John.
And I'm Con. Today we are joined by our very first author on the podcast, the incredibly gifted and talented Sarah A. Parker. We're going to be asking her all the questions from our time in this epic story, some that you have been asking us as well, and of course, getting into the head of the one who created Con Vagor.
Yes, Sarah is an international best-selling author from New Zealand, now living in Australia with her family. She has penned When the Moon Hatched, of course, book one in the Moonfall series, which is a number one Sunday Times best-selling book, by the way. But also the Crystal Bloom series, book one to Bleed a Crystal Bloom, book two to Snap a Silver Stem, and book three to Flame a Wild Flower, with book four in that series coming soon.
Before we get into that conversation, just a few quick things. This interview will include spoilers for all of When the Moon Hatched. So if you haven't finished the entire book yet, please save this episode and come back when you're done. We just finished covering When the Moon Hatched on this podcast. So if you need some friends to discuss each chapter with, we've got you covered there too.
And if you've been following and enjoying this season, we'd love to have you join us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can be part of our cozy book bestie Discord, hop into monthly book chats, and hang out with fellow readers. Or upgrade to the $10 Found Family tier for exclusive perks like merch discounts, early access to episodes, and behind-the-scenes content. Or you can upgrade to meet us in person at A Sorcerer's Affair this April in Kansas City. We will be hosting the VIP experience before the ball, and then we'll be there to dance all night long with you. Tickets go on sale at bookishloreeventskc.com.
And if you love this episode, you can write a review on Audible or Apple Podcasts. This is the best way to support and help more listeners discover this podcast. You might even get a little shout out, just like this one, a recent five-star review on Apple Podcasts from our new bestie, Jack Woods, titled TOG. I found you guys towards the end of my Throne of Glass journey while I was tandem listening to Empire of Storms and Tower of Dawn. It's so fun listening to the chapters and then coming to listen to you guys talk about it because I get so many new perspectives or find things I missed. Can't wait to reread Fourth Wing and do that listen with you guys. Love the podcast. So aww. Sweet. Thank you, Jack Woods.
Thank you,
Jack
Woods.
So nice.
Jack
Woods. Wow. All right. It's time to jump in. Let's welcome the author of When the Moon Hatched, Sarah A. Parker. Good morning, Sarah, and welcome to Between Pages and Friends. We're thrilled to have you here.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and it's an absolute honor.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it's an honor for us. Thank you for joining us today. We have had a blast covering When the Moon Hatched on this podcast. This quickly became my favorite read of the year. Your writing in this book is, it's just so beautiful and poetic, and we cannot wait to read
thank
more.
Thank you so much. That's just incredibly moving. Thank you. Can't wait to dive into it with you guys.
Me too. And we've been looking forward to this interview so much because we've had so many things we've been dying to ask. Stuff about like the gods, of course, Con Vagor. The lost brother, the moons, and of course, when they hatched, you know, all of it.
Sounds good.
Before we get into all the details, we wanted to get to know you a little better. For anyone listening who might not know much about you outside of being the author of When the Moon Hatched, we'd love for you to introduce yourself, walk us through what your career has looked like so far.
So Sarah Parker, I grew up in New Zealand initially. I moved to Australia about 10 years ago now. I met my husband about a year after I got here and I guess put our roots down. So he's Gold Coast born and bred. I've been here with him ever since. And we've now got three kids. We've been married for, I don't know, a while now. I lost track. So he's been in law for most of his career. And during that process, when we first had the kids, I was a stay-at-home mum and I started my own clothing design business. So that was predominantly what I was interested in, what my path through, I guess, school was. It was all revolving around just design and general clothing design in particular. I went to Italy on a design scholarship, learned all the stuff. Anyway, I decided to pour that into a small clothing business for kids' clothes. I kind of hit this point in that where I needed to kind of either take things overseas or basically go bigger or go home, really, because it was getting, my designs were getting knocked off on Wish and stuff. So it was just, I was in this funny little phase. And at that time we just had our third daughter, Arabella. I was sewing literally like 17, 18, 19 hours a day. I couldn't keep on top of things while also, you know, feeding her at the same time. And I sort of said to Josh, I said, look, I think I need to just take a step back. I've got these stories in my head that I've had in my head forever. Ever since I was young, my way of falling asleep would be to just tell myself stories, make things up in my head, pick off where I left off the night before. And I said, I think I just need to tell these stories. Something's telling me I need to do this. And he said, just do it. You know, why not? Like, you know, you're at home with the kids. If you can find the time to do it, just do it. So I stopped doing what I was doing and I just started writing. I didn't tell anyone I was doing it apart from Josh and my mum. I was just nervous. I spent basically the first year and a half just writing and reading a lot, voraciously reading. I said to him, look, by the time all the kids are at school and we're at that stage where I need to, you know, I want to be contributing to the household where I'm not needed at home as much. You know, if I'm not sort of doing something with it by that time, if it's not going anywhere, then I'll pivot. And yeah, Belly's now our youngest, she's just about 9. So yeah, I released, I think, Crystal Bloom around about the time that she was heading off to school. So it's been amazing. I've been able to continue doing what I love. It's pretty cool. But yeah, obviously born and bred in New Zealand, so I get back there quite a lot. And yeah, I love snowboarding. I love plants. I love my doggies that are right here with me right now watching. But apart from that, I'm very much a homely girl. Spend a lot of time indoors creating. I'm hyperfixate. So if I'm in a book, I don't really do much else than that. And it becomes, it's quite a thing. So yeah, that's me.
Very cool. Well, speaking of your imagination bringing things to life, our first like kind of set of questions talk about your writing process, a little bit of your writing style as well. Obviously, your writing is very descriptive, very poetic. Is this something that has always come naturally to you, or have you really had to work intentionally to achieve that specifically?
You know what? The interesting thing is, so I used to write mum little stories when I was young, right? And do little like competition stories and stuff. But she's kept a box of these stories. And about maybe 2 years ago when I was, you know, back in New Zealand, she showed me this box. And it's exactly me. Like it's exactly as I write now still. It was incredible because I just thought, you know, I thought maybe my writing had changed and, you know, obviously it has, but, you know, it was the same, very florally, very, very, very descriptive, very emotive writing. I've left her on this like devastating cliffhanger since I was like 7. So and it's quite dark for somebody of that age. It's like there's this stone monster that's literally, he's like coming for this princess who's on this cliff and like, she's been trying to get away from him this entire time, and then the very last moment of this story is this like stone like beast lifting his arms to like shoot shards at her, and she's like, the last lines are, he slowly raises his arms, and I'm like,
oh no, now we're all on the cliffhanger.
So
it's impressive.
So yeah, I've been here for a while.
Love it.
the funny thing is, so typically I am sort of more drawn, like the stories that stick with me are the ones that do have that sort of very high emotion writing as well, that dig deep. I love to feel like I'm really in a world, like that it's alive around me. The ones that, again, really do stick with me, it's sort of, you know, like Name of the Wind, and, you know, so that is sort of the real, more in-depth writing. I mean, it's not to say I don't also love to read something that is, you know, that I can just chew up and just, you know, very sort of candy. You know, I think we all have moments for that, but I certainly preserve a lot of time for those stories that I guess immerse me. Yeah.
Yeah. So a follow-up to that, are there any authors that you have read in your lifetime that have inspired you or like helped kind of shape that writing style? Or are there any specific styles or elements that you particularly love to read in a fantasy book?
I would say, so the book that really kicked me off into fantasy was Eragon. I mean, I think it's probably the same for quite a few people out there, the Light Dragon stories. I gobbled through those books and we didn't have a lot of money at the time. Mum was buying me these books and I was just absolutely devouring them so fast. And so love Eragon. But for me, as I've gotten older, again, the ones that have stuck with me are like Name of the Wind. And he did a little novel, I've got it up there, the something Silent Things. It's a little novel that he did about Orys. I loved that. There's also been, so Karen Marie Moaning. I don't know if you've heard of her. She wrote the Fever series. It's absolutely incredible. I just adore her writing. She's able to capture like this. She's able to dig deep in a world and make you feel like it is alive around you, but she does it at a very quick pace, so you're not glogged down. And I'm halfway through the last book because I don't want to finish it. And I don't read while I'm writing anyway, but I don't want to finish it and be like, oh my gosh, it's done now. So I've got it sitting there as like a prize for me when I finish Ballad. But I love the way that she's able to build a world so lush, yet it's quick. We're moving along fast. And that is something that I typically find in my writing is my first drafts are fluffy. I have to go through and physically make an effort to trim things back and to make things move faster. I tend to overtell and then I just need to I need to take some of that flavor away and just choose the flavor that really punches. So it is a bit of a process. It's always jam it all down and then carve it back and find the good within.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of you're carving back or creating all these things and we're talking about now your characters, which one of these characters that you wrote were maybe the easiest for you to write and then which some of these characters were maybe the most challenging?
Interesting question. Okay, so easiest? What book are we talking? Because it varies. Easiest in book one for me was Rave. She deals with her trauma much the same way as I do. She just stuffs it all down and goes, you know what, I'll deal with that. Maybe never, ideally. So yeah, she's certainly in book one, which the way that she deals with things, it very much aligns with me. So she flew out of me. I think, interestingly enough, although I write a lot of very heavy emotional chapters, they either come out of me really easily, like the diary entries, for instance, they flew out of me in a week. I just sat down and I was basically writing that diary and it just poured out of me. And some of them are quite heavy emotions, but it was a step back because she was writing them, you know, in a diary. So it was easier for me to write. But when I'm actually getting in the thick of unpacking something, I've got to dig deep. I've got to go, all right, I'm digging down into my icy lake. I'm pulling things up and I find it quite confronting. So I, you know, even though, again, I write these big emotional scenes, I am unpacking at the same time. So I find that quite difficult. I have to leave myself quite a lot of time to do them because I usually end up just an absolute shell after it. And yeah, so it's interesting. I don't have a particular character who was the hardest. It's just those particular scenes that are emotional. Again, I always challenge myself with them, but it is hard. And there's been a lot of emotional scenes in Ballad. So,
awesome.
I'm empty.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The way you laugh about that is so rave.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, as you're writing all of these like characters and places and things that happen somewhat based on reality, but obviously building a fantasy world, did you have to Google anything? What was like your weirdest Google search while writing that you could think of?
Probably something to do with decapitation. You know, I like to make things as real as possible. And, you know, sometimes you just got to go in there and do the old Google and risk, you know, having the FBI come for you. But yeah, that's probably takes the ticket, that one.
Nice. Well, it paid off. It's very descriptive.
Thank you. Yeah. I've Googled again recently.
Oh,
interesting.
All right.
John loves a good decap. So.
I love a good decap. That's right. I do.
Buckle up.
Are you a plotter or a pantser?
Oh.
Did you have the entire series plotted out before finishing book one? Or if not, you know, what did that kind of look like for you?
Oh no, I'm a pedantic plotter. I mean, okay. Look, it's bad. Like, I have to even have all the dialogue planned out. So, and obviously that changes as I get into chapters, you know, things shift and whatnot, but I can't write a chapter unless I've got it completely plotted. And I couldn't even start the story. I mean, I did try and start this story 2 times before I started it, this third and final time when I wrote it very quickly the third time. So I scrapped everything and then started again. But the first 2 times that I started, I think the reason why I was struggling was because I hadn't gone through the effort to make sure that I had everything completely lined up. So the month before I actually wrote Moon, I spent about a month just getting all my plot down. I've got a huge Google Doc that's got everything in it, and like right down to even like side characters' backstory, so that I know that I'm representing them correctly and their traumas correctly. So a huge amount of effort went into that. Named all the creatures, everything to the best of my ability.
Amazing.
And then sat down and went, okay, that's my outline. That's what I've got to color within. Let's do this. So I think I've learnt over my time and over the different stories that I've written, that if I don't plot, then I tend to chase a rabbit. And, you know, my brain will be like, oh, I'll get into a chapter and everything gets very colourful and vivid. And suddenly I'm like, oh, but, you know, I'll chase that rabbit. I'll be like, oh, there could be something so much cooler here, you know, and that might not necessarily be within the confines of what I'm trying to write. So I like to put boundaries there for myself. And, you know, even if they're just really sturdy stepping stones I'm leaping towards, I need to have them. In saying that, as I'm writing, after I get down my first draft, I will typically go through and read it over really fast and go, okay, what's not working here? And quite often, you know, the things that I've planned, sometimes there'll be an entire little arc that doesn't actually work with, you know, with the character's mentality, or it's because now that I've gotten into the weeds with it, it's not, you know, properly portraying a mindset or something, or some trauma that somebody's gone through, and I will have to completely uproot something. And I give myself grace with that. I go, you know what, it's fine. I'll just pop it in a different document. It still exists. But then quite often when I do that, what ends up going in its place is so much stronger and more powerful and more fitting for the character. So yeah, but yeah. I can't do a first draft without a heavy, heavy plot, with a heavy plan.
Yeah. And I feel like it comes across so strongly in your writing too. Like at the beginning of the book, I was just like, okay, wow,
there's a lot there.
Feels like there's a lot. Yeah. Like, in a great way, in the best way, like it feels like there are little Easter eggs at the beginning of the book that we haven't even seen come back yet. So I'm very excited.
You know, the interesting...
And your nodding is making me even more excited.
You know, the interesting thing, so book one, that was originally the first half of book one. So Ballad was originally the second half of book one. I was just, my plan was for this to be a 2-book series. But then when I got into it, I realized, A, there was no way I was going to be able to, I mean, that's, I think, 170,000 words. And Ballad is currently sitting at 206. So like, there was just no way, you know, unless the writing was tiny. So I went quite early on in the process, I went, no, I need to slice this in half, but mainly I need the readers to understand the past, you know, the full extent of the past. They need to understand exactly what these two folk went through and what the outcome of, you know, was of that for the second half of the original book one to hit the right way, hopefully. So which is why I made the decision to sort of go, no, I'm going to slice this down the middle. Book one's going to be very character orientated, you know, obviously have a bit of a plot running through it, but it's mainly character orientated, and, you know, give us the full scope of these folk, and then we can, in book two, we can kick off. So that's what I ended up doing.
Ooh. Wow.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Okay, well, speaking of this, you're kind of talking through like the drive of each book. Is there an overall sort of message or something that you hope readers take away from this series? And does that change from book one to book two or book three?
I never like to tell people what to take from a story because I think we all go on different reading journeys. And I feel like, as you know, the way that I want the story to be portrayed is, I mean, I've got a bunch of better and alpha readers in my document, right? Everyone takes something different from a story. Everyone sees something different. I love getting all those different perspectives because it really, I think, grows me as a writer. I think for me, though, what I took from book one was, for me, it was very much an exploration of grief. You know, I poured a lot of, I think, my loss of my nana into it, and you know, she very much shaped me as who I am, and losing her really impacted me a lot. And so for me, it was almost like a love story to her. And so for book one was very much that, and you know, and dealing with, I think, the loss of that person, how it shapes you, and how just not dealing with those emotions can really, I guess, you know, suffocate parts of you. Book two for me is, I went through a lot while writing book two. It's taken me a lot longer than it has to write book one. I went through a lot of life changes in book two and just learned a lot about myself. And I think for me, you know, Rave, she, you know, she's not Elowen. Like they are, the, you know, they are, but they are very, I see them as very different characters. And I think book two has been, for me, what I've taken from it is coming to terms with that's okay. It's okay to go through things and for you to let go of the expectations of other people that you're still going to be the same person. You know, that's it's okay to let that go and to sit with that. Yeah, that's for me what I've taken from book two anyway. It's been a journey.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's beautiful. And I'm excited to see how that comes through in the pages.
Thanks. Has your family inspired you in your writing? Are there any characteristics or little things from family members that maybe you've incorporated into your characters?
That's an interesting question. So I think the very interesting thing is, so I started writing, as I mentioned earlier, Moon twice prior, and it wasn't coming across right. And I think a part of that was because I had this different, in my mind, Khan was different. He was just coming out differently. And so when I did start writing it that third and final time, it was just after my husband had stopped working. So he left his career. He was a commercial lawyer. He was at the top of his game, and I was drowning. I was literally, I didn't leave the house for 3 months at one stage. I literally didn't step outside the front door, living on energy drinks, just trying to meet deadlines, and while also being the sole caregiver of three kids. And it was not sustainable. And he said, you know, look, I feel like I just need to be there for you, because I was splitting apart, it seems. And there was something about that that like just altered my brain chemistry. You know, like he literally set this career that he had like dedicated so much of his life towards. And it was, you know, setting aside his pride as well, you know, because he was, you know, he was at the top of his game. Like he's doing what he had set his whole life towards. And but he went, no, I'm going to come home and I'm going to fold your washing. You know, like that was huge for me, especially because I was so heavily drowning. And there's this particular scene in Game of Thrones where Jon Snow is like battling this army. And then, you know, and he's on his own, he's got his sword, and he just, you know, he just knows he's about to be a goner. And then next thing, this army just washes in and clashes with, you know, and for me, it felt like that moment. He really just swept it all up and went, no, I've got this, you do you. And so then I was supposed to, when it, you know, he retired and, you know, to be this house husband, and I was supposed to be writing book four on Crystal Bloom. But I said to him, look, I feel like I need to write a different story right now. And because it was screaming at me, it was screaming. So he was like, you know, just do you. So I sat down and I wrote Moon, and suddenly I could just see Khan. It was just so clear to me. And I think he had too many red flags in my first two drafts. I was writing him in a way that, again, is not now. So yeah, I think yes, I would say yes, there has been some influence. There's also a character in book two that I don't think would have come across the way that he does if we didn't have children. So there is certainly different situations that I think go into, you know, the creating my characters that allow me certain clarities and understandings on how to shape certain personalities and how characters would respond to things. But I mean, I don't think I would have embarked on this journey of trying to write a, and this is spoilery, so anyone who hasn't read it yet, close your ears. But I think that I wouldn't have embarked on this journey of writing a story where, you know, about, you know, Khan and Rave and Kazari in particular, that relationship, mm-hmm. if I didn't have kids and if I hadn't have gone through certain journeys myself. So yeah, I would say yes, but also no. I try to separate things as much as I can. I want my characters to stand as their own. I don't want them to be my family members, or, you know, then it hurts when you're doing when you're putting them through terrible things.
Yeah, that's right.
That's fair.
Well, it's kind of sounds to me like you have your own personal convo, which sounds pretty great.
Look, he's even got the same hairstyle right now. It's like since I started writing him, he's grown out this top knot, and I'm like,
oh,
sir,
boy.
Yes, sir.
You're living the dream over there.
Another green flag.
I'll take it. He actually, you know, the funny thing is, he held off from reading Moon. He actually just finished it the other day because then he's starting to read Ballad now. My dad's beating him, actually. My dad's halfway through it. So, but yeah, it's funny. He's reading it and he's like, he just has little chuckles. He's like, I could just, yeah, because he just knows me so well. So he can just see certain things. And anyway, it's funny. I won't go deeper into that, but because there was a particular chapter he was reading that he was like, okay. Anyway, I'm not going to go further.
Oh, God. Don't say 78, please. I know the chapter. I know it.
It's like, she's a brat.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, we've already talked a lot about specifically When the Moon Hatched, but we just finished reading it, John and Khan for the first time, myself and Kyle for the second time on our podcast. So we have some questions about the book specifically now. So start off easy. Mm-hmm. Who is your favorite character from book one? And maybe who's your favorite character from book two? And are they the same?
All right. No, I like that. All right. Now, apologies if I'm rusty. I am so deep in book two right now, so I will, it's like hard for me to tear the two apart. So book one, Rave. Again, she came out of me very, very easily. Actually, to be fair though, so did Vaya. It's been a bit harder for me with her in book two, just because she's going through some stuff and I've got to get deep and emotional, and you know, it just is more challenging. But yeah, so those two specifically, I really, really enjoyed writing in book one. And also though, this isn't, well, I guess it is a character, but it's so the diary entries as well. They again flew out of me so quickly. It was a very emotional week writing those, but very easy. So book two, I cannot tell you. I can tell you that you will meet this character very early on. But yeah, this particular character is in three particular chapters. So that'll give you something to think on when you are reading the book. But I really had so much fun writing this particular character.
Ooh, fun. Yeah. Can't wait.
Well, sort of in that same line, was there a particular scene in When the Moon Hatched that poured out of you easily, and or some that you wrestled with, or even like what was the first one that came to mind that sort of instigated the whole story, like the first scene you thought of that you built the story around?
Spoiler for listeners, but it would be where Khan shows Rave the moon. That for me, I shaped a lot around that particular scene. So the funny thing is, I started there and worked my way back. So, and I think that was one of the reasons why those first two drafts that I was working on didn't work properly, because I realized I wasn't going to hit that scene in the way that I wanted to emotionally. It wasn't going to have the right impact, and so I could see that the trajectory was off, and so I went, no, okay, not ready yet to write this story, obviously. But yeah, and I knew that I also needed to do that justice, so I wanted to be at a specific time in my writing to write it. But anyway, that scene was, yeah, it was a big one for me. Scenes that were hard, golly. Look, I've wrestled with a lot of scenes in book two, I can tell you that. There's been one scene in particular that I actually know two, to be fair, but that I've wrestled with. And, you know, sometimes that means you've just got to rip the whole thing up and go back to scratch and then write it again. And that's okay. I've taught myself that that's okay. But Yeah, in book one, I don't think there was anything necessarily. Oh no, actually, to be fair, I'm just gonna earmark the entire start of the book because I wrote that, and then I went back after I finished the whole draft, and I had to really kind of rejig the whole thing because I had over info dumped the front start of the story. There's this big world, and I kind of was trying to just shove it down everyone's gullet and go, you know, I gave too much at once, and it didn't really give a chance for us to bond with Rave nice and early on. Yeah, I went back and I just rejigged that numerous times until I felt happy with it. So yeah, the entire first chunk of the book, and typically, honestly, I really do, that is usually my hardest area of a book is the start. I tend to go in all guns blazing, and then I find my groove and things get a bit easier. So yeah.
Interesting.
So I, as a reader, one of the coolest unexpected surprises in When the Moon Hatched was the varying POVs, like the varying perspectives throughout the book. Can you tell us if there will be any more POVs added in book two or any other information about them?
Yes, I can. So we've got POVs from Pyrok and from Grimm and from Kazari. Ooh. And a couple of other little surprises there as well. So,
oh my gosh.
All right.
Yeah. Just sparked some of my theories.
I'm so excited. We all really enjoyed Pyrok's character, all of his dialogue in book one. I know we didn't get to spend a lot of time with him in Moon, but loved him so much. And I am so intrigued and excited to get more of Kazari as well.
Well, you get a lot of time with Pyrok in the next book. So he's very, very present. Okay. Yeah. So buckle up. So it's interesting, actually, because as I'm going through, I've got about, as I spoke in the pre-talk, I've still got about 30 chapters that I've still got to clear off on better notes and whatnot. But I've just finished going through some of his chapters, and I just love them so much. So I'm really excited for you guys to read them. Really excited. So yeah.
Awesome.
So are we.
We touched on this a little bit when you were kind of talking about your husband and using some of that influence to kind of like build that into the story a little bit. But was there an initial kind of idea that sparked you for Khan's character? Like, how did he kind of begin to take shape in your mind?
Yeah, the interesting thing is I just saw him. Like, I just saw him in the, you know, in this dark and gloomy sort of bar. And so he just planted in my brain. And, you know, it's funny actually, because it quite often is that way with different characters. Like they'll just kind of appear. That's certainly happened for this one particular character who's been my favorite character in book two. This particular character appeared to me actually quite early. So there's foreshadowing in book one that some people have picked up on actually, but there's certainly, I'm not going to go deeper into that, but yes, I just saw him and I felt his presence. And so I think, again, like with some of the dialogue that I'd pre-planned for him, as I mentioned earlier, I planned dialogue first, and some of that dialogue that I'd pre-planned and the journey that it was taking me on wasn't giving me that feeling that I had from him when I first saw him. So I was like jarred. So I had to kind of, you know, peer back and whatnot. But yeah, no, it's and it's the same way actually for the Miskins as well. I just saw this little creature staying at the bars.
Oh, that's fine.
So it's, I don't know. I feel like, and this is going to sound, so I lost Nana before I actually started writing this story. And so of my upbringing, she used to live in a little house on the farm, and it was on a hill right next to our house. And I'd wander over there and I'd sit with her, and she'd bake cookies, or bake cookies together, or she'd make me cheese on crackers, and I would, she had all these fairy books, they're just there, and I would like pour through them, and she had all these little creatures and stuff and little dragons and things and just little toadstools just sitting around the house. It felt like a different world. But I said this to Josh after I finished writing Moon, I said I felt like almost she was like leaning over my shoulder just whispering to me, like planting these little ideas in my head. So yeah, it felt like a really, it was a real emotional journey writing book one, and book two has been emotional for different reasons. But yeah, it's like a little Dropbox. I've got a Dropbox of creative characters.
Yeah.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
I had some questions about some of the items in the world of Moon so far. For instance, can you share more about Dragon Bloodstone and how it's made into currency and how the ledgers work? Like how we see a Curly Quill, how at, I guess at different locations, she could see how much is in her ledger.
So in book two, we're going to explore a lot more about the runes. So I don't want to give too much away because obviously it's there's a lot there that you're going to get to explore. And I want that to be able to be a nice organic journey for you. But yes, so the ledger is very much heavily dependent on those runes. They're really fun. I've had a lot of fun sort of exploring that more in book two and sort of showing more of that side of the magic of the world. But with the Dragon Bloodstone, so again, very much is currency. In my mind, I've always pictured it almost like, you know, with rhinoceros, how, you know, their horns are taken and some, you know, folk use them for medicinal values and stuff. I see it very much like that in the sense that it's not something that I look on and see it as like a positive thing. So, and that's why Khan and his territory are completely against it because, yes, it has medicinal values. It can extend life. You know, dragons are very of a different world almost. They, you know, this blood is coming from these dragons being felled and not being able to make it up into the sky where they can bundle up and become a moon and rest forever they want to be. So, you know, quite often when they do land in, on the ground, like that, when they're dying, they will do everything they can to get up to the sky if they can, if they have the capabilities to do that. So, you know, the fact that some of these dragons have not died in the sky, that they have ended up, you know, in the ground or bled into the ground, like it's quite a horrible and heartbreaking thing. And so I very much see that it is, again, although it's traded as currency because it can extend life, it can mend sick ones, you know, your family members and stuff, you know, although it's got those things that are, yeah, sure, great, it's also very devastating that it's come from this very tragic thing. So I don't see it as a good form of currency. I see it as a very much bad form of currency, and we do explore that a bit more in the following books. So yeah.
Okay. The other one, sort of on a lighter note, is the Butterberry Chews. Oh, yeah. That Elwyn eats. I fell in love with the idea of it. I tried to make some of my own. I think I did a pretty good job. But did you have something in mind when you threw that in there?
I did, actually. So my granddad had a jar of butterscotch like chews sitting next to his chair whenever I'd go over there, and he would have also a big stack of library books. He would churn through the whole stack within a week. Like there would be like 15 books there and that would be gone. Like he was a voracious reader. But every time I'd go over there, I'd steal one of his chews and they were Macintoshes. So he had two, Macintoshes or Withers, but the Macintosh is the ones that I remember most fondly. And there was different flavors of Macintoshes, and they're kind of like this really soft toffee that, you know, some of them are softer than others. Some of them are harder depending on what flavor you get. But I was pulling from that memory for sure.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he spent a long time trying to figure it all out.
I know. I like tried three recipes, made a few batches.
I'd love to try. If you're ever at a signing, I'd love to bring me some.
Oh my gosh.
I'll mail some over.
Yes. Amazing. All right. I don't know if you'll be able to answer this, but I feel like we have to ask some questions since we have you here. So why did Slotra's moon fall after 100 phases? Did
something
happen to it? Okay.
Dang it.
Look, I was like, was it them or did something trigger it?
I can tell you will find out in book two. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I can't. Okay. I'll ruin things for you. I don't want to do that. I won't.
I appreciate that. So again, I don't know if this is something that you can tell us a lot about now, but we do get some really interesting pieces of information in book one about the bonds that these people form with dragons. Can you explain anything anything further about how those bonds work, or is that something we get to learn a little bit more about?
I can tell you we do explore it very heavily in book two. So I don't want to give too much away because I, again, want that journey to be quite organic for you and that unraveling of that. Yeah. But it is, it's, I mean, these dragons, they're ancient, right? They're very, again, otherworldly. Mm-hmm. There is a lot, they're very sage. And so bonding with a dragon is, it kind of forces one to almost pry themselves open and look at themselves, you know, more deeply. And, you know, through that process, it's like a give and take, right? So settling in a bond, it's like, you know, you'll either, you know, you're kind of aligning in a way, you are very much aligning a part of yourself. And so that through that process, it can kind of go one of a couple of ways. Again, not going to dig too deep into this because I don't want to ruin things for you guys, but there is a reason that most folk go for eggs, apart from obviously it's you know, climbing on the back of a dragon, like it's a whole thing. But, you know, taking an egg, you know, the dragon, it's young, you know, despite being like of this very, you know, these wise creatures, like they're young, they haven't seen much of the world, they haven't, you know, absorbed much yet, but they get them right at the moment where they're hatching and they form that bond. And through that bond, it's almost easier to form for a rider. So, and again, we explore a lot more of that in the next book, but it's not as, I guess, emotionally challenging, which I'm sure, as you can imagine, would be quite hard for some of the characters in the story. But so, and then of course, you know, Khan's in a whole different realm of his own. He's formed a deeper bond with Rygun. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, Rygun's allowed him to take his flame, to take his strength, to take everything within himself. So he can literally, you know, encompass the strength and the flame of his dragon. But of course, when that sort of bond is created, if that bond is ripped out for any reason, if anyone, you know, doesn't continue, then it is like ripping out a tree from your chest, and it leaves something that just never heals. So yes, but obviously taking on one of those bonds as well, not everyone survives taking on one of those bonds. So because it does, it forces you to kind of just expand beyond. So that probably creates more questions rather than answers, but you'll get to read book two soon.
No, that's cool. I'm so excited. I love the concept.
So some of our listeners wanted to know, does Khan Vaygor have secrets? Is there more to his character that we don't know about yet? Oh. And I might have a follow-up as well.
Yes, very much so. We there is a lot. Well, I mean, except for those very small handful of people, my mum and my dad and Josh moving through it, who have read book two. Yes, there is a lot there that is. Actually, to be fair, though, even in book three, there's more to learn. But yes, there are secrets there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there, he's got a lot behind the scenes. So.
Oh, boy. All right. So follow up, if you're able to shed some insight, so we were all curious, what was Khan doing at the Hungry Hollow in the beginning of book one?
So he had received, you know, a message from Kazari that he wanted, you know, that she wanted to meet with him. So he was checking to see if she was there yet. He, yeah. So that's probably a bit more boring than what you're expecting, but yeah, okay. No.
I think when we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago, I think my answer had been, well, he had heard that Rook had a moon shard, so he was looking for him.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of exploring at the start of what he had, a lot of things that he was trying to do, but, you know, he was also checking in to make sure that Kazari wasn't there.
Yeah, yet. Okay, cool.
All right. Okay, well, one of the questions I had after we find out like that Elowen dies and or is taken away and Kizar gets the Aether Stone like immediately as soon as she was a baby, does the, I guess, crown or whatever that is in, does it like magically form to the wearer, or did they like have another thing prepared to like just pop the stone into to sit on to? Yeah, baby crown. How did that work?
No, if you picture like a crab, you know, with its all its chlorine tentacles, so, you know, and you've got it by the back. I'm from like a fishing area in New Zealand, so I'm in my mind I'm picturing that crayfish, but so you've got it by the back and it's chlorine, so imagine putting those claws, you know, it shifts and clamps down. So yeah,
okay.
Quite painfully.
And is that, there are runes on the crown, right? Does it have something to do with how it was formed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
Cool. Getting some answers. I'm excited. Yeah.
That was my guess, is that it like magically formed somehow, but I appreciate like the visual, being able to see what that's like.
So this one you probably won't answer, but
you gotta shoot your shot, you know, you never know.
I gotta shoot my shot. Yeah. So the Book of Void that was rumored, at least in the prologue, that Kaelas wrote before he was forced into the Aether Stone, does it still exist?
Yes, it does.
Okay. I'm very excited to know that. Would you be able to say how many people have read it and understood it?
I can't say that without giving something away. No, I'm not going to tell you that.
Okay.
Completely understanding the entire thing, or at least trying to, by the time Moon is finished, one.
Is it that mind weft person who says that they can read it that gave...
Oh, that Vaya got the bengal thing?
Oh,
okay.
We got the zipper. Dang it.
That's this is fun. Delicious little morsels.
Have we met the character who's read it?
not you. You guys haven't.
Got it.
I have.
Oh, I'm excited.
Well,
I'm being naughty. So oh my gosh.
No, that's okay. You're being great.
Speaking of red flags, I often look for red flags in characters of the books we read, and find quite a few usually, especially in the MMC of the books we read. Mm. Khan, however, had very few, or maybe I missed some due to so many green flags. Mm. Could you share any red flags, if any, that you have purposefully written into Khan or any of your other characters?
You know, the funny thing is, as my editor was reading through book one, she said, because she's my previous series, my main character is, he's all red. There's no green there. It's red. Well, there is green there. You just got to dig deep. But, you know, there's a story beyond the story. But when she was reading book one, she said to me, where is the red? She says, is it meant to be all green? So she was like, I don't know, is this how you want this to come across? I was like, yes, that is. She was like, okay, just double check it, because I just wanted to double check. But no, there is certainly red there. He's been through some things, you know, and he, through that time, he really like battled with, you know, some demons, with some you know, he'd lost the love of his existence. He's lost other folk as well that have been very important to him. So he's been through a lot. So, but the green that you're seeing is he has been through this very traumatic, painful journey, and again, so has Rave, but Khan has been sitting with that pain for a very long time, you know, so she's still in the stage where she's pushing it all down. I'm not saying that he dealt with it the good way immediately, or that a good way, if you need, but he's been through a big journey in the past. So the him that you see now is a him that has, you know, he's grown from all that pain, and he has grown around, and he's learned to sit with it, and he's, you know, so, which is another reason why he has a great lot of understanding for Rave, because, you know, he sees a lot of the stuff that she's dealing with, and he knows that journey, he understands it, and it allows him to have grace with her, and to, you know, and to really support her and not push her, and all those sorts of things. So yeah, there's definitely, you know, when he lost her, but you know, you will certainly see some moments in book two where you're like, okay, there it is. he was struggling. Oh, gotcha. He was struggling. But again, like, he's a good man.
Is it?
Yeah.
Would you say it's more difficult for you to write the characters while they're in the midst of their faults, sort of like wanting to get to the point where they've turned a new leaf, but having to hold back on that growth until a more fitting time? Yeah. Or do you enjoy writing that journey as well?
No, I mean, there is certainly a thing with my writing. I like to start characters off on the ground. You know, I like to start them off in their worst, because I like going, as much as it's hard, I like going through that emotional journey with them. I never rush it. I never go, okay, you know, this might be frustrating for a reader to get, you know, to get through this, to move through this trauma with them and to grow with them. But I never skip a beat. I always go, no, we're going to go through it the right way. It's the way that, you know, I mean, I just liken it to my own experiences, my own pains and things that I've gone through. And it's never linear, you know, you're never just going to go A to Z. It's, you know, you hop, skip and jump, and then you get dragged back to the start, and then you keep going, and eventually, you know, and you grow with each step. And so, yeah, although there's certainly been moments that I've found myself quite frustrated with certain characters, I weather it, and I I just take it in my stride. And just keep chugging forward. You know, that we eventually get there.
Get ready
for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Well, we had a couple of terms and creatures mentioned that weren't in the glossary that we were curious about. So
you mean that 30-page glossary?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, that's the one.
We were curious if you could describe a Doomquill, and Connor was curious, the River Oct, if that was named after a specific creature or if that was just the name of the river.
No, just the name of the river. Doomquill, so you will actually see some of those in the next book. So, but I liken them to a little bit sort of slash between, I guess, a porcupine, a monkey, and like a very feral wolf. So be able to climb. They raid nests. So they are, and they're very, very spiky. So they're you know.
Interesting. Yeah.
I would not have called the monkey, but I did call the porcupine and the wolf.
He did.
So I'll take that as a win.
I'm thinking like a very fierce monkey, you know, not like a cute little snuggly one. Yeah. It's on your finger.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sounds terrifying. Can't wait. Okay. So I had this question and I don't remember if I just saw someone make a comment about it that threw me off in my head. When I read the epilogue with the Scavenger King in Moon, my assumption was that Arkin Vagor was the youngest sibling. But then I try to go back through it and I don't think it's explicitly said. Is that something that you're able to confirm, like where he falls in the birth order of the Vagor children?
No, he's older than Khan.
See, that was my assumption, because he feels like he has the right to the throne or whatever.
Okay, I was assuming that he was the youngest because he has a different mother and Vea's mother would have died in childbirth. So I heard someone say that he was the oldest and I got confused.
Yeah, you'll
so he's the oldest.
Learn more about him, yeah. too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, no, he's older.
Interesting. Cool. That changes some things.
Well, before we do get to book two, is there anything in book one from what you've seen or heard from people reacting to it that you think people have just completely glossed over or missed completely that you're just saying like, wow, nobody noticed this?
There is, I mean, I go out of my way to avoid, I don't go on Goodreads. Sure. I tend to, unless I'm tagged in a video or something in like a story, I just don't purposely, when I'm writing, I like to keep out, because otherwise it's, you know, I opened TikTok like 3 months ago and I scrolled once and it was immediately someone like, I'm never trusting BookTok again. This sucks. I don't even follow like anything to do with me or the book, you know. I was just so I haven't touched that since, but so I
didn't leave a comment.
No I do. No, I never do. No, I just know it's look, you'd be surprised at the sort of stuff that people try to get to you, you know, like inboxes and everything as well. So I know I just stay out of it, you know. At the end of the day, reading is subjective, and I'm very like, I get different things from stories that my friends get, you know. That's just how it is. And but I write these stories for me, you know, and above everything else, I write the stories for me. I write the stories that I want to read. But, you know, and I'm just honored that, you know, that people have found enjoyment in my stories as well. But I know, so because I don't go searching for stuff purposely, like driving into a firing line, there is, though, to be fair, from different chats and stuff that I have, different, you know, different podcasts and stuff, and I've never been asked about a couple of things. So I do wonder if that has mainly been missed. But it's cool, though. I mean, the way that I write typically is that everything doesn't completely come to light in book one until the entire series has been read. So, you know, there are a scatter of Easter eggs in there. Just so many. And I mean, even after reading book two, you know, people will be able to go back and read book one and be like, holy heck. And it's the same with my other series as well. It's just the way I write. It's the way I love to write. I love hiding things. So yeah, there's a lot there. It'll light up when you read book two.
Would you be willing to share any of the things you've never been asked about?
No, I'm not going to. I'm not going to tip you off.
Okay. Now I'm like second guessing all our questions and all the ones we decided not to ask.
No, we're going to have a lightning round after this. Just naming things off.
Fire off everything from the Q&A. Yes.
I'll be very interested. If we end up doing another one of these for book two, I'll be very interested to chat with you guys about some things. Yeah.
We would love that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about The Ballad of Falling Dragons, which we are all super excited to get our hands on and get answers to hopefully all these things that you've not answered for us today. And that's okay. That's your job. We get it.
Good.
So you probably, you have. You've done great. So you probably can't answer any of these either. But like you said earlier, we got to shoot our shot. So here we go. First, maybe this is easy. I don't know. Will book two start where we left off, or is there going to be like a time jump? And then also, will there be like time jumps to the past, like before, like the diary entries?
Yes, we do start where we left off. I can say that.
Okay.
And we do have, not diary entries, but we do have glimpses of the past via some other methods.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh,
nice.
Okay.
Would you?
John's face.
He's going to like stare down and get the answers.
You kind of touched on this earlier. Would you say it is book two being more plot driven, character development driven, or information driven?
Definitely a bit of all, but I would say, again, like a lot of the plot for my original book one sits in the second half of the book. Right. So it's definitely, if you look at the plot for book one and the plot for book two, like it's like, you know, this. So, but there's also so much character growth and development and relationship growth and development. And that's kind of intertwined throughout, you know, this journey. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you said with Vaya specifically too, her character development in book two goes a little deeper into her. Mm-hmm. So for book one, we had a lot of Rave, and then Rave and Khan, and then we got Vaya, and for a brief moment, Wreck.
Yeah.
But would you say percentage-wise in book two, like, is there going to be a lot more other people coming into that POV, or is it still mainly going to be Rave and Khan, or is Vaya going to get, like, a bigger bite out of it?
Percentage-wise, let me think. So, all right, hang on. I'm gonna have to tally in my head. I wonder if I click on something, because I've got with all my chapters down the side, I've got like little emojis.
Gotcha.
So that you can actually literally see.
Nice. I love those.
Yeah, I'm visual, so I like to be able to just see on my document like that, you know, what the sort of, if it's, you know, whatever. But there's probably,
you can just go ahead and screen share if you want to. Yeah, this is
really obvious. Like, they're really like, you're like, you know, no, that's Pyrock. I hear that's Vaya. That's right.
So you have an emoji assigned to each character?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, we need to know which one's which.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Can you tell us what any of them are? I'm fascinated.
An ice cube is Rave. Pyrock is a flame.
Nice.
Scavenger King's a mountain.
Nice.
Vaya's it's like a wounded face with a bandage around its head.
Okay.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I love this.
Yeah.
I'm totally on board.
She has no idea that we love emoji so much.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That makes sense.
Okay.
What else? I've got a few cheeky ones in there that I can't talk about.
Could you tell us the emoji without telling us who it is?
No, I'm not going to do that. Give it away.
We'll have to ask again after book two. Yeah.
John, do you want to share our love for emojis?
Yes, we also have a love for emojis. So I have something that we do on our podcast where I'll do our chapter recaps for the chapter section that we read. And if there is a spicy scene, any kind of spice, I will recap said spicy scene using only emojis. And we have titled it Emoji Erotica.
Well, so I need to see Emoji Erotica for Moon. Okay. I need to see how that works.
Take it away.
All right. Oh, sounds good.
So good. And I need to see Mojo Erotica for Ballad after you finished.
Yes. You got it.
He actually titled a whole new segment of Emoji Erotica for Moon called Dreamoji Erotica.
Dreamoji Erotica. Yes. That's right. For all of her flashbacks.
Oh, yes.
All of the flashbacks.
Yeah. Amazing.
So I love that you have emojis. That's so funny.
Yeah. That's great.
More about the emojis.
Great. Full circle.
So what has been your favorite thing about writing book two so far?
Other than the emojis. Oh, golly. Look, for me, I think, so the same thing happened with me for my Crystal Bloom series, where my second book was the first half of an entire arc that I had in mind. So for me, releasing Moon, like I immediately felt like, you know, I was itching to get the second half of what was that whole arc out there, because until it is out there, I will feel like I haven't given that full picture of that whole arc that I wanted to give. So my favorite thing has been actually just being able to tell that story, to, you know, to fully unravel that package. And yeah, I mean, there's, again, like, because I am such a, I guess, a planter and building things up and, you know, and slowly, you know, showing things. A lot of those scenes in one don't come to complete light until book two is out. So I've been excited about writing them, about painting that full picture. Yeah. And also there's been some characters and some creatures and stuff that I've really enjoyed in this book. Some certain moments that I have just absolutely loved writing. There's been some moments I've really tussled with. So they drop down the bottom of the least favorite area, but we're focused on the positives, and that has been not that one particular scene that I really struggled with. But no, this is my favorite book I've ever written. I love it. I love it. I hope that, you know, some of my readers feel the same and that they just enjoy it as much as I've enjoyed writing it, because it's really, really close to my heart, and I've put every single bit of my energy into writing it. It's taken a huge big bite out of me in the best way. I've been glad to give myself to it. But it's interesting because it's been a very different scenario compared to book one. In book one, I wrote that in like 6 weeks, the first draft. Wrote the second draft in 6 weeks. I went to edits, you know, I think all up the process took me 6 months, whereas this one, it's taken me almost 2 years. You know, that's not even including the time it took me to plan it when it was part of the second half of book one. So it's been a big process. It's been a completely different process to book one, and it's come with its own challenges, but I feel like I've done the characters justice, and I feel like I've done, you know, the story justice to the best of my ability currently. So I'm happy. I'm really happy, and I can't wait for everyone to read it.
Wow. Awesome. That's huge. We're excited to read it. I'm grateful you're taking your time with the story and feeling this way after having poured so much of yourself into it. That's
put it this way. Amazing. I was supposed to have this particular draft version of the book done in January. So I took literally almost an extra year, but my publishing house has been amazing. They haven't pushed me at all, not a single step of the way. They've been very, you know, very just supportive, and they've allowed me to really, you know, stretch my wings with it and make sure that I'm doing the story justice, doing the characters justice. So I couldn't be happier. You know, with the amount of time that I have spent on it, despite it taking so long, this is the time it needed. So hopefully that shows.
Yeah. Oh, that's great to hear.
I'm sure the scene that you said you're struggling with, if you wanted to confidentially send it to John, and he'll transcribe it to emojis and then send it back, maybe that would help.
Emoji Veronica is what it would be.
Yeah.
I'm kidding you, and I say the scene, like, I wrote the scene initially in the first draft in a different era of the book, and then this one particular scene, and I was like, nope, that's wrong. And so in the second book I wrote, this moment came up elsewhere, and it's just a big scene. It's a big scene. It's got a lot of surrounding stuff.
Yeah, it is.
It's got a lot of emotion. It's got a lot of everything. Huge. And it took the time it took. But you know what? I'm very happy with it now. So, But it's.
So one of my favorites so far, I've always scrolled by this emoji and have wanted to use it. And I was finally able to. And I'm wondering if you'd. So it was a curling stone, and I believe the term was fingers curling upward. I think is what it was. Yes. And I was like,
he was so proud of that.
I can use it. I was so excited.
Anyway. No, you know what? There's some more curves. You're gonna be able to use that again in the second book too. So you're yay.
Perfect.
More curling. Oh,
I'm gonna get some more use out of it. Stone. That's amazing.
If we weren't excited for book two before.
That particular emoji, I use that when, like, I'm messaging, you know, some of my writing friends. I'm like, oh, I'm spiraling. And that's my when I'm spiraling, when I might find a pothole or something. Yes. And I'm like, spiral, you know.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
but now I won't be able to look at it the same.
Well, now we just need a special edition where instead of the POV name, it's just their emoji you chose for them before the chapter.
Just add it to the glossary.
Yeah.
This emoji means
the special edition. I'll be like, you know what, I'm not going to give you an extra chapter, but I'm going to give you an emoji glossary.
Yes.
We accept. All right. Well, speaking of the glossary, every episode that we have, Connor has the honor of being our pronunciation guide and letting us know how to pronounce the things. But since she was a first-time reader, I didn't let her look at the glossary because I was afraid of any potential spoilers. So I got to be the reader of the glossary. And so I need to know, for book two, are we getting another glossary or additions to the glossary?
Definitely additions. Or... yes, there'll be additions. There's certainly things that I couldn't put in book one because it would have given away certain things that are in book two. So yeah, definitely there'll be additions. And yeah, so just thicker. She's gonna that 30-page glossary is gonna be thicker.
Awesome.
Perfect.
I'm here for that.
Yes,
that's great. Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
And then same with the map. Are there going to be additional spaces to the map?
No, that will stay the same. But no, the funny thing is with the map, so I didn't draw that final version, but I drew my own version of the map before I even started writing the story. So when I say I'm a planner, then I sent her that and I said, look, this is what I want. So it was already there for me to work off as I was writing book one. So no, that'll stay the same. I won't say any more than that because I might give things away.
If I could kind of to go along with that, would you ever consider when you have the series, you know, fully out to make a glossary book almost as like a field guide to the world?
Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, my father had something like that for, I think it was C.S. Lewis's Worlds. And I loved reading that book just to get into the world without reading a story. But I didn't know if that was something you would ever consider doing.
I've considered that since I started writing book one. I would love to do something like that.
Amazing.
So I would have to find I've got a few artists in mind actually, but it's, you know, it's very interesting because there's so many different things I want to do once I've got the time and I'm not in this hyperfixation mode, but also like the Scrippy game, I want to make that as well so that people can actually play it. So so I'll get there eventually. I'll finish the story first.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I, again, shooting my shot. Is there anything else that you can tease about the Ballad of Falling Dragons, even if it's like a completely out of context quote or a creature that we don't know anything about yet?
The last line of the book.
Not that. I don't want to know.
I'm not doing that.
Or the first line of the book.
No, that's already out there, actually. So the prologue is actually in the back. Yes, it is. I could probably give you the first line of the next chapter, though. I feel around the cold, calcified ridges of a jagged hole in Slatra's side.
Ooh. Calcified.
Calcified.
Oh. My gosh.
Whose point of view?
This is fun. Wow. Okay, you said the prologue is out there. Is it in like the new special edition of the book?
No, so it's in the small paperback version. I thought I might have one nearby, but my shelves were getting very encumbered. It's the small it's a small UK version. They changed the front cover a little bit. It's a little paperback. Okay. Yeah. It's in the back of that.
Ooh, yeah, okay. We'll
find it online. And what you read is the first line of the first chapter then?
Yes, correct.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. I'm excited. Cool. Wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes, apart from that, I'm not going to give any more away. I want you guys to be able to enjoy the experience.
All right.
Yep. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, it has been so cool hearing about your writing process, the love for the world that you've created. We could talk forever about it. But before we let you go, we had a few wrap-up questions.
Yeah. So we've seen a few sweet moments of your husband helping out on your book tours and signing events. And I know that we've kind of already talked a little bit about him leaving his job and supporting you and stuff. So how has like his support shaped your experience with like the events as far as like doing the things, but also just maybe being an author in general, or maybe even just being a mom?
I can tell, honestly, I couldn't do this without him. I literally could not. Even now, I mean, he's got the kids out of the house. Like, it would be, it was school holidays right now, so it would be rowdy, really rowdy. He's taken them out, taken off down to the beach. He's got, you know, he's taken off my other computer to get the screen fixed because I can't even access anything. I've got this computer has got literally no distractions on it because I've got no files, nothing. But he's gone off to get that fixed for me. He's gone off to do some posting for me. He deals with my calendar. I don't even have it on my phone. He's got it on his. He keeps me well informed of all that sort of stuff. He deals with most of my emails. Apart from the ones that come straight to me. He does all the website ones, so he does all that. He goes over my contracts for me. He obviously at signings, like he does all my stamping, so then I sign, you know, then he passes it on to me, which speeds up everything for everybody, which is great. It means people aren't waiting in line too long, but because when I'm doing, I just talk, so I'm like talking, I'm stamping. When there's more things for me to do, I'm like I'm just it takes me forever. But he's so careful with it as well. He's so purposeful. But he also, while he's doing that, he's talking to my readers. You know, he's like, sometimes they come up to the table and they're really nervous, and you know, and they've been waiting in line, so it's been a while, and it's, you know, he can build up those nerves, and he makes people feel comfortable and stuff, which I really appreciate. And you know, it got to the point, actually, honestly, on my last tour, where he was like, I feel like sometimes people were more excited to get to him than they were to me, because there was these these TikToks that were out about him stamping, and they were like, yeah. So I love that, because you know, he makes everyone feel so welcome, and he really just, you know, represents me and the values that I really want to stand for. So you know, it's amazing. He again folds my undies, and you know, and he allows me to be my chaos self, basically, and I just really appreciate that. I feel like, you know, I always thought to myself when I was younger that because I am so in my head, so literally away in different worlds in my head all the time, that I wouldn't be able to find somebody who would, you know, who I guess deal with that, because I'm very away with fairies, very, very absent. And he is like a touchstone for me. You know, he anchors me down, and, you know, I think he's also very good at, I think, just giving me different perspectives on things. So yeah, I'm very thankful for him, and I feel very lucky. So he's great.
That's awesome.
So sweet.
Well, tell him thank you for all of his emails so that we could be here with you today. Because he's who we've been talking to as well. So. And for taking out the kids so we could be here. We appreciate that from him too. So.
Yes, shout out to Josh. Yeah.
You kind of touched on earlier with this originally going to be one book and now it's two. Mm-hmm. How many books would you say currently is the series planned to be?
Well, unless book three blows out like book one did, which I really hope it doesn't, because there's so much, I think, beautiful symbolics, you know, symbology and stuff. Is that a word? No, probably not. I do this. I make up words.
Symbolism. We were close.
But no, so there's a lot of symbolism in there being three books of the series. So I really want to stick with that. I actually, when it came to writing book two, I sat down first and I went, okay, I need to pull some of this plot forward as well so that book two doesn't blow out like book one did. So I did that, and, you know, just to make sure that we're hopefully going to hit the end of book three at the end of book three. So yeah, should be three. I have not seen any signs yet that I'm not going to be able to gets here in three.
Fair enough. Are there other stories in this world you'd like to tell? Or do you think that you'd move on to like a new world for a next story or ever come back to this one?
I mean, I've got countless different stories that I want to tell, but there is definitely stories that I could tell in this world that from, you know, a prior timeline. So never say never. I've certainly left that door open for myself so that I can do that if I want to. You'll probably spot different doors as you're going through the stories. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I won't pigeonhole myself. If I feel inclined, I will go there, but we'll see. We'll see how I go.
Yeah. Well, lastly, we're just huge fans of you after reading this and the world and the characters that you have created as well. We know a lot of our listeners are too. So where can we follow you or your work and just how to kind of keep up with you?
So mainly I'm most present on Instagram. I like to keep the areas that I'm posting on things and whatnot to a minimum because otherwise it's very hard to keep up. And I also don't like to sort of scroll on different things. So I do have a TikTok, but I'm not on there ever. Sure. But yep. Yeah, so no, Instagram would be the place. I've also got a readers group as well, which is on Facebook. And I think that's in my bio on my Instagram. So you can reach it through there. I do some updates and stuff in there as well. I tend to sometimes be able to answer questions and stuff in there as well. I've got an admin in there who answers questions for me as well if I'm in the writing cave. So that's also a good place as well.
Okay, well, thank you so, so much for joining us today. It has been such a treat getting to chat with you. Pleasure. We have really enjoyed sharing this reading journey together on the podcast and with our listeners as well. And we are so excited for The Ballad of Falling Dragons to release in April.
I can't wait for you guys to read it. And thank you so much for today. It's been so fun and it's been a blast. Yeah. I just really appreciate the time that you guys have taken to read the story and to come up with all the questions and to speak with me. And yeah, I can't wait to get booked to you all.
Yay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was an amazing conversation. Like, we got so much more than I would have even anticipated. Holy cow. Huge thank you, shout out to Sarah A. Parker for taking some time to chat about When the Moon Hatched.
This officially concludes our coverage of When the Moon Hatched. For now, we'll be diving back into the Moonfall series in 2026, leading up to the release of The Ballad of Falling Dragons. We can't wait to read it with you all when it drops on April 28th.
In the meantime, we'll be kicking off the brand new release, Brimstone by Callie Hart. We're so excited to dive back into the Fae and Alchemy series, this time with all four of us as first-time readers. You can read along for each episode or cure your book hangover by breaking it down with us every week in November and December.
And lastly, if you'd like to stay in the know on all things BPNF, give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok at Between Pages and Friends, and make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. As always, thank you for being here and for reading with us.
Until next time, stay wordy, stay nerdy, don't stress, and stay blessed.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Moon.
Just moon? Yep.
Moon, everyone.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.